And happy Friday, everybody. Welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're also streaming on the Game Nashville app, as always. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Darren McFarland will be along here in just a little bit. We are live today at the Coleman Tractor in White House, Tennessee, 3613 Highway 31 West. You can come out, say hello, and stop by and enter for your chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville Predators game. So pretty cool prize on hand as you can register to win those tickets. It's a little chilly, it's rainy, and it's April, so you never know what the weather's going to do here in Nashville. But Willie D, how you doing?
I am doing well, Chase. It's good to talk to you.
Okay, there he is.
I'm ready to rumble, and it is sprinkling back here in East Nashville, but it's supposed to clear up a little bit later. I'm hoping it does because I know there's some big baseball games going on the high school front later today. And, of course, down on West End, you've got Mississippi State coming into town. It's Kumar Rocker Day, as they like to say, on the Vanderbilt campus and through the Vandy Boys network, the big baseball contingency they have in Mississippi State. Of course, it's got some great fans. So I hope it clears up and is a nice night because that's going to be a special atmosphere. They're going up to 40% capacity at the Hawk. And, of course, you know, for hockey fans, speaking of Hawk, it's the Predators Blackhawks, round three. How did the Predators respond after what happened the other night, you know, trying to get back on the beam? Big, big win for the Red Wings last night, which is going to energize both teams. The Stars lost in regulation for the first time in eight games. So the plot has thickened. The plot has thickened.
How about Jacob Vrana? Four-goal night.
Woo!
He's been done.
He has come in and taken advantage of the opportunity. What a great chance for him. He comes over after being, you know, sort of shut out in Washington, not in the plans, and the Red Wings say, here, you know, here, big guy. You can be on our first line, you know. We want you to be the star. And so far he's played well for them, and that was a big lift. You know, for the Predators, it eased the pain a little bit more of having to settle for a point on Wednesday.
I was cracking up at the Predators' Twitter account last night, changing the name to number one Detroit Red Wings fan. Never thought I would see that, but I understood why that they did it.
I think they ordered some Little Caesars pizzas at one point. I saw some pizza. Of course, they got to be careful. Of course, Hunt Brothers is the hometown franchise, which we will always support, but you know, for one night, we jumped on the bandwagon. And
they needed the help.
And over the weekend, too, it'll be the same thing. You know, Nashville is the only team. The Nashville-Chicago game is the only game in the Central tonight. And then the Predators will sit back Saturday, Sunday, and watch to see what happens. Detroit will play the fourth of the four against the Red Wings. I don't remember if it's Saturday or Sunday, but It is going to be a heck of a race these last few weeks. There's no question.
Oh, yeah, no rest for the wicked, for sure. At least the Preds can have a weekend off. Hey, I do want to take this moment while we're talking hockey, because he just texted me. Happy birthday to Jeremy Kegover, because I know he's listening and obviously a big part of the Predators Radio Network for many years. So he enjoyed my weather report, and so I wanted to give him a birthday shout-out.
Well, happy birthday to Gover. Absolutely. That's nice. Good shout out to him. He's clearly a guy that, you know, even though he's not in there day in and day out like he was, he's still a guy that is in the network, right? If you scroll during any Predator game, everybody always wants to see what he has to say. Always has excellent insights, observations. So, yeah, shout out to Gover.
Absolutely. So, again, Predators, Blackhawks tonight coming off of that loss and a surprising loss by the Predators the other night. We'll have pregame coverage starting at 6 o'clock and then the puck drop at 7 here on ESPN 102.5. The game, Willie will be back in the TV booth as well after NBC had the game on Wednesday. Willie, I last night, and I texted you guys this, it was a rare Thursday night off because usually the Predators are playing on a Thursday night. So a lot of baseball to take in. My Braves were off, and so I did fire up the old BetMGM app, and I dabbled a little bit, and I was thinking, all right, maybe I'll sprinkle a little on Willie's Mets. I regret that decision.
Yeah, I could have told you. I should have told you beforehand. They're not hitting right now. It's kind of frustrating because I think they have a very good lineup on paper. They're just not stringing together a lot of hits. Last night they got beat for a third straight time at Wrigley Field, a real cold night. It went into extra innings, and you know, the man on second rule is a big one. In the 10th inning, the Mets got the man on second. The very first pitch was a wild pitch,
yeah.
So they had a man on third with nobody out. A couple of walks later, they hit into a double play, and then of course the Mets got out of the ninth, but when the guy was on second in the 10th, they were not able to pitch through it. So it's compelling. I still don't know how I feel like that. I hear a lot of people clamoring for this. I saw Kevin Ingram put this up, and Gary Cohen of the Mets actually brought this up as well. I think there would be a lot of people that would say, let's meet in the middle here. You know, let's have the man on second rule start in the 11th inning or the 12th inning and just play the regular game up until then instead of immediately going to it in the 10th. I don't know. I think I would go for that. At least, you know, give me the 10th inning with regular baseball. It does change everything when there's a guy.
I'd be fine with that. Like I told you guys, so being in Cincinnati last weekend, that was the first time that I've seen it live, you know, and in person. And I've warmed up to it. Like, it doesn't, you know, I'm just kind of like, all right, it's here, so I might as well just get used to it. Now, the one that I can't do that with is the 7-inning doubleheader. I'm still not a fan of that. But I would like that if they went to that where it kicks in at the 11th or the 12th. Like, you play one or two innings of regular baseball, see what happens there, and then you try and shorten it up. Like, I've always kind of felt, and I know they won't do this, they seem to have found something with the 3-on-3, but I always kind of felt, you know, you could do 5 minutes of overtime the old way, 4-on-4, then go to 3-on-3 to maybe have less shootouts. But, you know, they like what they have in the 3-on-3. So, I mean, it's probably not going to change. Not everybody's going to be happy about it. But if they were to do what you're saying, I'd be okay with it.
You know, I think there's ways they could meet halfway on some of this stuff. Like, I think, you know, instead of the 2 7-inning doubleheaders, which I'm okay with, but how about 9 and 7? That's what we did in the SEC way back when I was in the league. You didn't play Friday night like they do now, which I don't know why they did that. I think they should have just done Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But they did a 9 and a 7 on Saturday and then a 9-inning on Sunday. So the 7-inning game was a one-off instead of, you know, 2 7-inning doubleheaders. So I think I might be in favor of that, just to have less percentage of the games be 7 innings, but still make room for doubleheaders and say, you know what, we need to have doubleheaders. You know, let's schedule a couple more off days, and let's just have a small percentage of games, make-up games in a lot of cases, be 7 innings. But like last year in the 60-game schedule, there were probably too many games that were 7 innings, really. Because it changes the strategy, right?
Agreed.
Now you get 4 innings out of your starter in a 7-inning game. If you have a good bullpen, that's a very, very different different plan that you can do.
Changes the strategy, changes the stats. You know, I mean,
complete games all of a sudden are back in the mix, too. If you've got Jacob deGrom in a 7-inning game, you're thinking, I'm getting 7 from him. Right? I don't need to buy bullpen
right.
for this game.
I just wish, too, like, we always have these conversations that the season's too long and, you know, 162, should they chop some games off? I don't think you have to chop some games off. I think you just build in doubleheaders, schedule them, have, like, some weekends where, you know, there's a Saturday and, you know, whether you do a traditional doubleheader or whatever, but just schedule those things in there from the very beginning. Make those be 9 innings, and then if you have to do the makeup doubleheaders, then maybe I'll concede and give you the 7. But, you know, I think just having some scheduled in there from the very beginning would be a good thing, and you could take at least two weeks, maybe more, off the season.
I agree. I agree. There's ways you can do this. Now, that would involve great communication and great partnership between the players and owners, which they don't have. And so that's just part of this entire mess that's coming after this season is over. So there's dark clouds on the horizon. But if you had fun, creative people you know, that wanted to work together, you could come up with all kinds of great ideas to help the game, to make it flow quicker and things like that. But they've got a lot of problems. You know, there's no trust, there's no communication, and right now there is a problem with the game, and that is there's not enough action, right? It's home runs and strikeouts. The stolen base is going by the wayside. The hit and run, the bunts, all of that stuff is there's not much of it.
Yeah, no, there's not that strategy and the small ball. You know, we're National League guys. I mean, that's stuff that obviously we're fans of. So there's our
right, last night just watching the Mets and Cubs. If you were watching and if you had some incentive to watch, you saw a lot of innings where there was a guy on third with less than two outs. They couldn't nobody could make contact. Part of that is because the pitchers are so good. Right, the pitchers throw gas now. That's to their credit, right? That's not baseball's fault that you have these amazing talents on the mound that are throwing harder, right? But the hitters don't adjust. The hitters don't choke up on the bat with two strikes. Go back and watch Don Mattingly in the 80s in his heyday. You couldn't strike him out. You know why? Because he adjusted with two strikes. He put the ball in play. You know, but they don't do that now. And so what's going to happen? You're going to strike out a lot. You're going to have a lot of embarrassing times where you can't get the guy in from third base with less than two out. All you got to do is put the ball in play.
Exactly. There's our baseball tangent for the day. I have a feeling there's going to be a theme on today's show of us getting things off our chest even before 12 o'clock when it's you just made the list. And I have a feeling one person in particular is going to make the list quite a bit today. That's what we have on tap. We have... we have much more. Tony Husband, who is the TV play-by-play man for Nashville SC, we're going to talk to him at 11 o'clock, get the latest on them. They, of course, play tomorrow. We'll go down to Jacksonville at 12:30 with Tony Smith from 1010XL as we preview the Jags. We know one pick they're going to make in next week's draft, but we can talk about the rest. And then Dan Rosen from NHL.com will join us at 1. But when we come back, Brett Okamoto, who covers the UFC for ESPN, there's a huge fight this weekend in Jacksonville. We'll talk to him when we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. UFC 261 coming your way this weekend, live in Jacksonville on ESPN Plus. And we say hello to Brett Okamoto, who covers the UFC for ESPN. Brett, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm ready for this fight. That's how I'm doing. Masvidal, does he have a chance to get in there again against Usman in their rematch? We're going to find out. But this card looks like it's stacked and packed, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun outside of the main event.
Absolutely right. This main card is the main card in particular is pretty amazing. I mean, Jimmy Crute is fighting Anthony Smith to lead it off. Jimmy Crute ESPN named him last year the number one fighter in the world under the age of 25. This guy is just, he's really, really good at a young age. He lives in a van next to his gym. I mean, that's how committed he is. He's not poor. He could have a house if he wanted it, but he lives next to the gym because he's that dedicated. You got Chris Weidman on the card, who's a former champion, of course, with those two wins over Anderson Silva and then three title fights. I could see these fights... a few of them being extremely competitive, especially that Rose Namajunas versus Wei Li Zhang. I think that's flying under the radar. So, yeah, really good card.
Yeah, and then, of course, the main event is Usman, the champion, coming in against Masvidal in the rematch. Usman has just been on a tear. And if you look at the Vegas odds, a pretty heavy favorite in this one. Does Masvidal have a chance at all in your mind?
Yeah, I do. I think he's got a chance. I mean, of course, we're all... The expectation is that Usman wins. I mean, he's from stylistic matchup, it's a tough fight for Masvidal. I mean, his wrestling is not bad, but it's not at the level that Usman's is. And when you have a significant advantage in the wrestling department, you just get to dictate where the fight goes. And that's a huge advantage. But Masvidal is a veteran. He's been doing this for 18 years. He knows how to, even if he gets taken down, he knows how to force guys to work for it over the course of a 25-minute fight. You know, he doesn't need to win 20 minutes of that 25-minute fight. He needs to land a good shot and put Usman away. He's definitely capable of that. So, again, I'm picking Usman to win, but I'm not looking at this as just a wash. I think that Jorge does have a chance.
Do you think it goes the distance, or do you think it's you know, somewhere in the third, fourth?
I think it's most likely to go the distance. But what I do think is that there are going to be times in this fight where Jorge does force Usman to throw punches. And Usman's been working on that a lot. He switched up his camps last year. So he's been with his new camp in Denver for about a full year. One of the best coaches in the sport. His name's Trevor Whitman, training guys out of Denver. He actually trains Rose and Namajunas too. So he's got two title fights back-to-back that coach does. But I do think Masvidal is he's going to lose the majority of this fight, but he's going to force Usman into situations that Usman might not be comfortable with, you know, and those are the ones that are really going to put you on the edge of your seat. But I do think that the most likely the fight will go the distance.
Yeah, and you mentioned the women's strawweight championship match. Rose is only plus 170 coming in as the challenger, so I take it that you like her chances as well.
I actually do like her chances. Yeah, I feel like I'm on a boat by myself on that one. I feel like just everybody is they like Rose. Everyone in the sport likes Rose, but I think that they're caught up in how good Wei Li has looked, and I get it, man. I mean, the Wei Li has looked phenomenal, and she's coming off of a fight. It was a very close fight. It was a fight of the year last year against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, which if you follow this sport, you know how good Joanna Jędrzejczyk is. She's a former champion. She was the longest reigning champion in the strawweight division. So those two had a war. Wei Li prevailed. She took the belt from Jessica Andrade, and she did it in a matter of seconds, knocking out the former champion. So Wei Li is good, man, and she lives this sport. She's in the gym 100% of the time. But Rose is me, and I do think that the line is right in terms of Wei Li should be the favorite. But I got a feeling about Rose, man. I'm picking Rose in the fight.
You mentioned earlier Chris Weidman on the card facing Uriah Hall. Now, Uriah Hall is somebody I've always liked, and he is a slight underdog in this middleweight fight, with Chris Weidman being at minus 125 from what I'm seeing. Do you feel like they got that one right, or is this one going to be pretty close?
It's tough to say if they got that one right because we don't know what we're getting from Chris. You know, I mean... In a team sport, when you start to get older in your career and you've been through some surgeries and you're not you once were, you know, like on a basketball court, you can blend in and you can still contribute, right? This is a sport where if you don't have it, it gets shown very, very quickly and very, very violently, right? So Chris, in my mind, he's you know, one of the most consistent best fighters I've covered over the last 10 years. But we have reached a point now in which, you know, he's with the injuries that he's had and some of the results that he's had. He changed camp for this fight. He's always trained out of New York. Now he's living in South Carolina. You do wonder, what does he have? What does he have left? You know, and so it's tough to make a betting line on this type of fight because if you just go back and look at their skill sets historically. But I like where Uriah is in his career much better than I like where Chris is in his.
We're talking to Brett Okamoto, covers UFC for ESPN, and you know, the UFC has pretty much been chugging along throughout the pandemic. We know they've had the Fight Island. They've had fights at the Apex facility. How impressed have you been with Dana White and being able to, and the fighters themselves agreeing to do all this through the pandemic to keep things going, which has made some great programming for ESPN+.
Yeah, it's been remarkable, man. Nothing short of remarkable. There are a lot of different challenges that they had to overcome. I'll tell you one thing that kind of sticks out like as a story to sort of symbolize that. You know, the PR team at the UFC, when you go to an event, they'll print out a bout sheet, right? So you have the bout sheet sitting there right in front of you when you're watching the fights. The record of them reprinting bout sheets is like 15. Like they had 15 changes to one card just because of everything that's going on, obviously. You know, whether it was a COVID positive test or, you know, one of the coaches get it, a fighter gets it, or travel is messed up. And that doesn't just mean printing off a new bout sheet. That means that the matchmakers were scrambling to remake a bout. You know, there have been a lot of hurdles to make this thing happen over the last year, and the UFC just puts its head down and does it, and that is a credit to everyone over there and to Dana White in particular.
Tell us about the atmosphere for this, as you know, we're watching all sports. You know, here in Nashville, you know, the Nashville Predators just went up to 33%. Vanderbilt baseball's got a huge series, two top five teams. They've gone to 40%. Tell us what they have done for this and how they arrived at the decision.
Well, I think it's just it's not terribly different, I think, in terms of sort of the feeling around other sports, and that it's a return to normal, but normal is like fantasy world again for all of us, you know? I mean, they're finally having so they had a press conference, and they had it in front of fans, and on, quite honestly, sometimes those press conferences are sort of duds. Like you get to a point where it's like these guys have talked to the media so much that they get into a press conference setting and it can be kind of boring. And sometimes I don't look forward to them, to be honest with you, because it's just like there's nothing really said. But welcoming fans back into that atmosphere, it made it for a great press conference this week, you know, and having fans at a weigh-in, at a ceremonial weigh-in where these guys will square off. And the energy level will just be through the roof. And it's just a return to maybe some things that we took for granted before, right? I think that's what we're all sort of feeling in a lot of different ways and what happened over the last year. So it's going to be fun to see these guys walk out on Saturday and have that energy from the fans. I think you're going to see some reactions from even the fighters themselves who are just walking out and getting that feeling again.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching WrestleMania a few weeks ago and just having some fans there in Tampa Bay. You could just tell that some of the wrestlers were emotional because they haven't felt that in over a year. So I can only imagine what some of these fighters are going to feel just hearing, even though it may not be the crowds that they've been used to, just hearing some fans cheering their name.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think it will be the crowd that they're used to. In fact, I think it could be even more of a crowd than they're used to. It will be 100% capacity, and I think that these fans are going to be wired from the very beginning, right, because they've been waiting to do this for so long. So I actually think that as far as a crowd atmosphere goes, I think this is going to be above average, you know, if you look over the last few years, just because they're going to be excited to be in there from the very first fight.
Brett, give me the fight that you're outside of the main card that you're the most interested in that fans might want to check out.
Yeah, I mean it's a tough question, honestly, because they built up this card around the main card for sure. But if you're looking down the list, Brendan Allen versus Carl Robertson is a middleweight fight. Between two guys who have shown a lot of promise, especially in my mind, Brendan Allen. He's a real talented grappler. He's a guy that could give some people some problems and make his way into the top 10 of the sport of the division at some point. And then you know the fight that leads kind of ESPN prelims into the pay per view card is always a good one. In this case, it's Alex Oliveira versus Randy Brown. Alex Oliveira is a veteran. He's been around for a long time. He's never really sort of gotten into that title contender status, but one of the reasons that is because he takes a lot of risks in his fights, so his fights are usually very entertaining. So if you're going to check out the prelims and you want to see some entertaining fights, watch Randy Brown and Alex Oliveira, and if you want to watch a young guy with a lot of promise, I'd probably point out Brendan Allen.
Well, it's going to be a fun card for sure. Looking forward to it. Brett, appreciate the time as always, and we will do it again down the road.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Take care.
Brett Okamoto, who covers UFC for ESPN, is at UFC 261 taking place in Jacksonville. You heard that, 15,000 fans, 100% capacity, and the facility that they're going to be in. And you know, Jacksonville, Willie, has, over the last few months, there's a wrestling company that Tony Khan, who is Shad Khan's son, owns, AEW. They've had some fans. They've been outdoors. It's right outside of where the Jaguars play, and so they've been able to do that. But, you know, we know Florida has kind of been ahead of the curve, but to have an event 100% capacity, we know the Rangers did it down in Texas. It seems like we're inching closer and closer, and as you mentioned, you know, the Predators going up to 33% as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting just to track all of the sporting venues and how they're approaching this and how they want to take the right steps at the right pace, right? As there are more and more vaccinations taking place, you maybe have the more opportunity. You don't want to rush it, but you want to try to work with your local health authorities. And, you know, different areas of the country have different viewpoints on this. For example, tonight at the United Center, Chicago still has not opened up, right? It's really interesting. We discussed it with the Robin Leonard article too, right? The players, in a lot of cases, you know, they would love to have the reins loosened a little bit, but the league isn't ready to do that yet. You know, they have had such strict standards. You know, Robin Leonard talking about it was interesting perspective, just saying, you know what, we basically our lives, whether home or on the road, is you go to the rink and you go back to your room. Or when you're home, you go to the rink and you go home. You can't even go grocery shopping, right, according to the protocols. And so people are anxious to try to at least get to the next step, right? But different people have determine what the right step is for their area at this point. So you have a, what did he say? He said maximum capacity at this thing.
Yeah.
It's the UFC, right? And you got an event at the United Center tonight. You have a great fan base in the Blackhawks, and they have not opened up yet for anybody.
Yeah, and the Braves,
they're still piping in the noise.
Right.
The crowd noise and stuff, which isn't always on time. You know,
no.
Now that you have the real thing at a lot of places, at least in small numbers or at least percentage numbers, you can now really see, unless the guy's right on point with the piped in noise, how different it is.
Well, and you know, like for Nashville, for the Predators, you know, I'll go sit in Barrel House and I'll have the headphones on. I'm not always out watching the game, and you know, I know that it's not full because I just know I'm there, but it sounds good on the radio. And,
oh, it sounds, you know, so good. It sounds so
good. Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure for you, you have it in the effects in your headsets, and so I'm sure it sounds different. I mean, I remember that first game of the season sitting there with Darren looking around, and, you know, we're one of, like, 12 people in there, and it was just weird. And then you hear the piped-in noise. So, I mean, we certainly have come a long way in a short amount of time and still have a ways to go with all of this. But, you know, something like the UFC being able to do this and start it, you know, at least with that sport and have an event with full capacity, I think is big. But, you know, we got, as you like to say, you know, I'll channel some Coach Willie. We still got work to do. So let's not get too excited just yet.
Well, the whole thing is, it's all directly related to the vaccines, you know.
Sure.
And so the more people get vaccinated, the quicker we'll be able to go to the next level. It's as simple as that, right? So if you have not just taken the time to go do it, you know, do it, right? There are places you can go. There's a lot of ways you can do it. You know, you can schedule it ahead of time, or sometimes you can just go up to a Kroger and ask and say, hey, do you got anything? I mean, there's ways you can do it to start to get the process started, right? And the faster we move through this process, the quicker we'll get there. So it's really
Tuesday.
As simple as that. Even if you say, you know what, I've already had it, or if you're like, you know what, I've been fine to this point. Well, that is still that. If you're about opening things up and wanting to get back to games, that's slowing the process up, because even if you feel that way, it's not the numbers are going to dictate when these things are going to open up. So if you're not doing it for yourself, then do it for everybody, right? Because that's really, you know, that's my mindset.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I don't.
And you have a choice.
I feel like I'm a healthy
Whatever.
Person. If I were to get it, I think I would be okay. I think I would, but I'm getting it because I know that is helping everything move forward. You know, I know that is the quickest way for us to live the lifestyle that we want to live, and that is not have to worry about all this stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll put it like this. I didn't get it for me. I didn't,
yeah.
You know, I got it for a family member, and just because, you know, that was my choice, and you all have a choice, and I'm not going to sit here and lecture you but on what you need to do. But, like, I did it for that reason because I'm, you know, I have been very lucky in my life of having a very good immune system. So I had it and got through it. But, you know, I did it because I'm worried about the people around me. So, you know, again, it's your choice, but I'm glad to see things reopening and getting, you know, more and more people into things. And hopefully here in a few months we're talking about our baseball adventures like I did last weekend of going to Cincinnati and watching the Reds
right.
beat Darren's Tribe.
Well, you know, so. When you say it's your choice, it absolutely is your choice. But in choosing, just consider that if you're choosing not to do it, we're going to get stuck with you know, not being able to get to the capacity, right? In a lot of cases, they're not going to change the viewpoint. They've got to get to a certain level of vaccination. We do as a society to be full throttle, not having to wake up every day and worrying about this. So again, it does go beyond just your own personal, you know, am I protecting myself? So I think
sure.
that's a good way of putting it.
We are live today at Coleman Tractor in White House, Tennessee, 3613 Highway 31 West. We'll, of course, be here until 2 o'clock. You can stop by and enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville Predators game. So we got our promo table set up, got some pucks and flags and different things, and plus you can register to win those tickets. So be sure to stop by and do that. We'll have much more coming here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick. Nice tribute there to Shock G as he passed away at the age of 57. We're out here at the Coleman Tractor in White House, Tennessee. And again, you can come by and register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Predators game. We'll be here till 2 o'clock, 3613 Highway 31 West. We've had a few people stop by and say hello. So good to be out here today.
Chase, White Willie? House was one of the first when I first started doing sports talk, 1993. This is going back a ways. But I had been in Nashville for 4 years, but you know how you are when you're a college student. You don't leave the campus very often. You certainly don't go out to the outlying areas very much. My roommate, Kevin Anglin, was from Franklin, so, and I had another teammate, Chuck Mays, who grew up in Nashville. So we went to their parents' houses and stuff like that, but I did not know the surrounding area very well. So I remember there was a caller that used to call our show from White House almost every day. I forget his name, but I was like, White House? I thought it was a joke. Like, I thought it was just one of these like callers that had a handle and like, hey, I'm calling from the White House. Like, wait a minute, White House? I mean, I thought it was a joke. I started laughing. I was like, White House? He's calling from the White House, huh? And like, no, that's a town, dude. Get with the times. Learn your area. So I had to learn about Lafayette and Lebanon. You know, you don't say Lebanon. You know, I was a rookie. Rookie mistakes, man. I made some mistakes.
Yeah. The first time I came out here, and obviously growing up in this area, I was probably 8, and a friend of the family had a lake house somewhere out in these parts. So that's what brought me out here.
All right.
So I was looking at this. It's mock draft time again. The Athletic got there, and I heard Robbie and Joe talking about this earlier today, but they got their staff together, all their writers, and they did a mock draft and all made their picks. And so, you know, again, we know my interest in mock drafts, and I'm always curious of who goes where and who takes what. They did the first two rounds, I believe it was. And so, you know, at the top of the draft, it was pretty easy. They went Lawrence, Zach Wilson to the Jets, Mac Jones to the 49ers, and Justin Fields, fourth overall, to Atlanta. They had Cincinnati taking Ja'Marr Chase, which, if you listen to the money line last night, we had a pretty good talk about the first five picks of the draft and the first non-quarterback taken and the value you could get there. But, you know, the reason it's a subject is because, you know, who really knows what's going to happen at four? Does Atlanta decide to go quarterback and find out what's next for Matt Ryan? Do they decide to stick with Matt Ryan and maybe go Kyle Pitts, get him a, you know, or Ja'Marr Chase, get him a weapon? I don't think they go Ja'Marr Chase, pretty good at receiver, but we know Arthur Smith loves to use the tight end. So Kyle Pitts being a weapon for Matt Ryan, or do they trade out? And then Cincinnati, you know, I think that as nice as it would be to reunite Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, you got to protect Joe Burrow. He got beat up a lot. So Penei Sewell would be the pick for me if I'm the Cincinnati Bengals. So
what else have the Bengals, just out of curiosity, I haven't followed it, what have the Bengals done to improve their offensive line? They need more than just one guy, right? That offensive line was brutal. So have they done some extensive work to try to address that through free agency, or are they still needing like more than one offensive lineman?
Yeah, I mean, I think they need more than one. I mean, they signed
I'm with you. I think you got to draft a guy to help him. I think you've got to. If you can't protect him, he's just not going to be able to stay on the field.
They signed Riley Reiff, right tackle. I mean, that was pretty much what they did for the offensive line, and that was it. I mean, they re-signed Quentin Spain, who was with them, so we obviously know him. But that's about it. So they need to do more And I think there could be another wave. You know, they could draft more than one player, but then there could be another wave of free agency that they end up addressing. But they got Larry Ogunjobi, who was with Cleveland, a defensive tackle. They got Awuzie, a cornerback from Dallas. They signed him. Mike Hilton, another cornerback. Trey Hendrickson, defensive tackle. So, I mean, they definitely helped out the defense. And I, like I said, I get if you go with Ja'Marr Chase, not a bad pick at all. There's familiarity with the quarterback playing together at LSU. You know, even Kyle Pitts, if they decided to go that route. But I just think you gotta protect Joe Burrow. So that's why I would go Penei Sewell. So continuing the top 10. The Athletic, and again, this is all the Athletic staff putting this together. The Dolphins take Kyle Pitts at 6 overall. Sewell goes to the Lions at 7th. The Patriots trade up. They trade with Carolina for the number 8 overall pick and select Trey Lance from North Dakota State. Bill Belichick going to get his quarterback, according to the Athletic. What do you think about that, Willie?
Well, that would be exciting. I don't know. I mean, I have this is what is great. I love the insights that we get from Tim Hasselbeck on these things, because you just don't know if this is somebody writing just a fun idea that they think. Remember, we had the guy on from Carolina, and we were saying, well, what about that rumor that was going on about Christian McCaffrey being traded for Deshaun Watson? He goes, well, that was something I just wrote as a what would be an interesting, I forget how they couched it, like an out-of-nowhere move or something like that. But that's how it all started, right? Then people read that,
sure.
And now you start talking about it. So I don't know if that's something that the writer said this would be a creative way for the Patriots to address their quarterback position, or if that's actually coming from somebody from the inside that is trying to give you a tip, like a, you know, real insightful knowledge of what's happening, the thinking in the Patriots room. Or if it's a total ruse, right? Tim Hasselbeck's talked about this, where sometimes it's intentional from the inside. They want the media spinning something out there, right? They want some people to believe that this might be how they're thinking. Like where you say, a source told me that they're interested in trading for Trey Lance, right? But in all reality, they have no interest in him, right? All of that can be true. All of these options are out there, and that's why we, you know, mock drafts are never going to be perfect.
Right. They're fun, though.
But, I mean, yeah, they're fun. I mean, it would be exciting if that happened, right, in the Patriots. Because I think we're all curious what the heck the Patriots are thinking for quarterback long-term, right? They've got to address it.
So, Trey Lance, 8th overall, according to The Athletic. Denver goes Micah Parsons, linebacker from Penn State. And see, if there's not a trade or Trey Lance doesn't go earlier, I mean, I could see Denver being in the market for a quarterback. I don't think they're sold on Drew Lock by any means. So I could totally see them being in the market. And then the Dallas Cowboys select Patrick Surtain, the cornerback out of Alabama, which I've seen so many mock drafts having him going there, which would reunite him with Diggs there in the backfield, in the secondary. I'd be totally fine with that. So if the Cowboys took him. Azeez Ojulari, the edge rusher from Georgia, 11th overall to the Giants. The Eagles will take the second wide receiver off the board with Devontae Smith going there. So you could put some former Alabama players together with Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith. That would be interesting. The Chargers take Rashawn Slater, a tackle from Northwestern, at 13. And J.C. Horn going to Carolina. Jaylen Waddle goes to Arizona. Najee Harris, the first running back off the board, to Miami at 18. I'm working my way to 22. And here's the interesting part about this, because Joe Rexroad is representing the Tennessee Titans in this. The Titans do not pick at 22. They trade. They send the number 22 pick to the Packers for numbers 29 and 92. The Packers go with the Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, the linebacker from Notre Dame. So we go back to 29, where Joe is going to make his selection. And Joe Rexroad has made Chase McCabe very happy.
Oh, I thought you said
selection.
He's made Chase McCabe the pick. I thought that's what you were going to say.
I'm the pick. I don't know what I'm doing.
That would shock the world.
That would shock the world.
Chase had great pro day measurements.
I did. All the intangibles. Joe selects for the Tennessee Titans wide receiver Elijah Moore from Ole Miss.
I've heard him talking about him on the show. You know, I mean, this is there's at least, I don't know, three or four mock drafts we've seen where they've taken a wide receiver with their first pick. I still think.
But they've stayed at 22.
Right. I think you could get the guy low. I don't know. I might be off. My theory is if there's a better option at a more scarce position, then I would do that and wait on the wide receiver. But I think what we've concluded is one of these wide receivers, whether it's the kid from Minnesota or Elijah Moore or somebody else, there's probably going to be a worthy first-round wide receiver sitting there at 22 or anywhere near 22. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I'd be surprised if there weren't, because there's just too many of them.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have – if they stay at 22, and I've been saying I would almost rather them go corner because I really like these corners that are going to be around there. You take that, and then you have a chance at one you could trade back up in the second round, something like that. Elijah Moore could still be there. I have seen some mocks that he could still be there in the second round or someone comparable. But it's a deep enough position that you don't have to address it. But here, what Joe has done is he's traded back in the first round. He's added another pick at 92. And so you've gone from 9 to 10 picks, I guess is what it would be. I like that because I think adding that other pick in such a deep draft is good. And then you go and you get a solid player because some of the guys taken around him, they got Alex Leatherwood going 28th overall to Indy. I think that's too high for Alex Leatherwood. I think he's more of a second-round guy. Landon Dickerson is a guard and a center from Alabama and Baltimore at 27. There's another tackle, Kasimi from Texas. Christian Barmore goes 25th overall to the Jags. Now, he's interesting. I heard Joe talking about him this morning for the Titans. I don't see that. I think that there are other pressing needs, and I think they address the defensive line in free agency with DeNico Autry. You're going to have Jeffrey Simmons back, so I don't think you necessarily need a DT there. Even though Barmore is a heck of a player, I mean, he wouldn't be a slouch. Quiddy Pay goes 24th. So I think that you're kind of looking at, if you were to trade to 28, 29, somewhere in that range, it's best player available with what you need. Now, Caleb Farley goes 31st overall to Cleveland after they make a trade with Kansas City. Caleb Farley is another one that I've seen linked to the Titans. So so what I'm gathering is you're more of the, you'd rather address another position than receiver with the first pick, wherever it is.
I think I would rather, but that's not saying I'm going to completely close myself off from that if I just absolutely love the best wide receiver, because it could go a number of ways, as we've seen, right? You're probably not going to get one of the Alabama guys or something like that, right? We know who the first few are going to be, but there's then a next group, and I think it's going to depend on how much John Robinson prefers one over the other. Because he can't control who falls there. There's going to be somebody, like if he just loves Elijah Moore, and Elijah Moore is at 22, and he likes him so much more than any of the other wide receivers that are in that neighborhood, then that's where I think you've got to just go ahead and do it if you love it.
Yeah.
But if you don't love any of them, and you feel like you know there's somebody else with a different position, then I think you've got to go there, right? If it's a position of need.
No, and I get that. I love Elijah Moore, so that's why I'm totally fine.
I know
fine
a
with
lot of people, and I think Joe's with you, obviously.
Yeah, but see, again, that's the thing about this draft. There, you have some people that it's not that they don't love Elijah Moore; they just love somebody else a little bit more. But it's kind of like, if that's what it ended up being, and I'm the same way. Like if they ended up staying at 22, and it was J.C. Horn, I'd be fine with that pick. I'd totally be good with it. So, I mean, that's the good thing about this draft. Joe has in the second round, 53rd overall, the Titans taking Tyson Campbell, cornerback out of Georgia. I'm good with that. I like him. 6'1", 193. He kind of fits what they're looking for. That's what Joe says, fits the bill physically. He has what Dane Brugler calls a rare and raw combination of high-end traits. He wasn't always good at Georgia, but the ingredients are there. So if they go receiver first round, corner in the second round, I mean, you've addressed two big needs right there, and Campbell is another one that I think, as Dane Brugler and Joe Rexroth said, could fit what the Titans are looking for.
Well, I think one thing we're going to guarantee, Jace, is by next Thursday we will have hit every single mathematical way that this can go. You know, the number of different ways we've run this thing is pretty remarkable, right? Somewhere in here, we just need to make sure we tape all of them, and then we act like it's the only one we ever said. If we get it right, we say we hit this guy. We told you it was going to be Elijah Moore, right? Well, Elijah Moore would be easier because Elijah Moore has been thrown out a lot by a lot of different people on our show. But I think we just need to make sure we hit every single person it could be in the first round, and just keep it on tape and then play it. Say, we told you.
I told you guy starts at 2, but, you know, we can brag on ourselves, too.
Hey, sometimes you got to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can check that out at The Athletic. Joe Rexroth picking for the Tennessee Titans. A couple of others in the second round. Kellen Mond, the quarterback from A&M, 52nd overall to the Bears. So Adam Johns, who I guess writes for the Bears, has Kellen Mond going in the second round. I'm trying to see if there are any other quarterbacks that they have off the board in the second round. The tight end out of Penn State, Pat Freiermuth, I think is how you say it, going to Jacksonville. You know, tight end's another one that the Titans have to address. They have Kadarius Toney dropping into the second round, which I've seen a lot of mocks having him going in the first round, including some having him going to the Titans. So I kind of found that interesting. But yeah, always enjoy. And Terrace Marshall, who I had the Titans taking in the first round, they have him in the second round going to Baltimore. So it shows you that, you know, maybe none of us really know what we're talking about when it comes to these mock drafts. The Houston Texans select Davis Mills, the quarterback out of Stanford, 67th overall in this mock draft. So there you go. That could be their quarterback of the future.
All right, so give me this with the tight end before we end the hour here, Chase.
Yeah.
Just if I'm just sitting there and I can't, you know, my head's spinning, I can't do too much preparation on this, but I need to know three tight ends, obviously not Kyle Pitts, because let's just assume that he's gone. Give me three tight ends that you think could be in the mix for the Titans, rounds 2 through 5 or whatever. Just give me three guys that I should be keeping an eye out for.
So you're thinking more like a day two.
Day two or even day three, but let's just say day two, you know, because you never know one of these guys might fall. But who should be on our radar for a tight end if they're looking for one?
Brevin Jordan out of Miami. I like him. He's according to CBS, they have him as the third ranked tight end. And so he's probably a day two guy. Tommy Trimble out of Notre Dame. Dan Shankus told us about him. Only a sophomore coming out, but redshirt. But I think that he's somebody that they could look at. And then the third one that I'd probably give you would be Hunter Long out of Boston College. And so I think any of those guys could fall, you know, on a day two, potentially day three, and the Titans could pick them up. I mean, that position isn't as deep as some of the others, but I think there's certainly some good value there.
All right. Now I'm ready to go. See, these are the things I need.
See, I'm here to help you. That's what I am here for. When we come back, we'll have more coming here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, including a chat with Tony Husband, the play-by-play man for Nashville SC. But first, Willie, you're going to tell us about Lee Company.
All right. Let me do exactly that. Lee Company is ready to serve you at 615-567-1000. They're a big sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey. The next radio broadcast, as we know, is tonight up at the United Center. Darren McFarland will start our pregame coverage at 6 o'clock. Lee Company, big sponsor when you go down to Smashville. and maybe you're part of the legion that is starting to grow in numbers. You'll see the Lee Company display out there when you go to Bridgestone Arena for any event. But Bridgestone Arena has a lot of services for you, for your home or for your business. I talk about home maintenance, but also the maintenance can apply to business as well. If you're in the office, your place of business, and you need some maintenance help, Lee Company is glad to do it. Regardless of what it is, just a catch-all, they've got a department for that. So just go online, leecompany.com, make an online appointment. You don't even have to pick up the phone. You can go back to your workday. They'll come in. They'll address the problem for you. Lee Company's got a lot of great services like that. With the air conditioning ready to crank up here when the weather gets warmer here very soon, if it's not running properly or if you haven't had it checked in a while, great reason to call Lee Company, 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you.